This is Steve Hurley, and welcome to the Pivotal Outdoors Podcast, discussing hunting, fishing, and outdoor pursuits, swapping stories and feeling alive. All right, welcome back to the Pivotal Outdoors Podcast. In today's podcast, we have Brielle, Anique, and Chad Ochnick. They'll be talking about a recent hunting trip they took to Africa. They hunted various plains animals, including a Cape buffalo. I know the Ochnicks from us all being members at the greatest archery club in the world, Limerick Bowman. Brielle, Anique, and Chad, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Before we dive right into the Africa trip, can you give the listeners some background on your experience in archery and hunting in general? Brielle, you can go first if you want.
Yeah, so my dad bought me a hunting bow when I was around 6 years old. And I kind of just, my parents didn't think I was going to be a big hunter. So they threw me into target archery, and I kind of just fell in love with it from there. I've been to many clubs, kind of just upgrading and learning new things. And then when I was 11, I started the USA traveling circuit, which is a series of competitions that you compete to make the USA team. And then I first made it when I was, 12? Yeah, 12. Yeah, I would say 12. 12 or 13, I made it my first year. And then I've been on it for 2 years since then, and I'm competing for this year again. But in that process, I fell in love with hunting. So
that's interesting, going, instead of hunting and then, you know, getting a bow and then going into target, you went from target to hunting. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of people don't start, a lot of kids start with hunting because of their parents and then switch it, learn about target, but I was the opposite.
Okay. And Chad, how about you? What's kind of what's your experience and what kind of got you to get Brielle into archery?
I actually started in the hunting later in life when I was about 30, my early 30s. And my brother, not my family, my brother was always into it, hunting a lot. And he would always ask to go, and I would always turn it down, this and that. But as we moved forward, you know, one day he got me to go out, and ever since then, I took to it. And I purchased a hunting bow, and with the challenges that, if you know, you face with the archery end of it, I thought it was pretty cool. And then we bought Brielle her first bow when she was 5 or 6. And like she said, it just started where she started in the target archery and then into the hunting end of it. But I myself, it's always easier to partake in something when you have a good following behind you, where she's like, come on, I want to go hunting. So it makes it a lot easier to do those trips.
Very cool. And Neek, are you a hunter, big hunter at all?
I am not. I like going along on the trips. I like the hiking and being out in nature, and I cook the food.
Oh, okay. So
that's basically what I do. Well, and I plan the trips. So those are my goals in the whole thing.
She's okay. A planner.
Well, that's a good deal. Cause I'm always trying to figure out good recipes and stuff. So if you're up for cooking
it's a challenge because, they've gotten bear. They've gotten tonight. We just cooked some antelope. There's buffalo, elk, of course, venison. When we were in Africa, they cooked all the things that we shot there. So it's a challenge because everything is different. And, you know, people don't want it to be gamey. But I think it's delicious.
Yeah, that's great. So you're saying that you are really the planner. Africa, I feel like, for a lot of people is a scary idea to plan because there's so many unknowns, and especially because we're coming out of this whole COVID period, I'm sure it's even more hectic. What were some of like the big logistical issues or things that you had to face with Africa that would be different than say like a Montana or something?
Well, when we first planned the trip, I think the biggest obstacle was Chad because he was a nervous wreck leaving the country. he was fine in the United States, but leaving the country to him was just the unknown and very scary. And it was to the point where I said, we're doing it now. There's no excuses. And then we dealt with Dubula and Safari. That's where we went through. And Yvern was amazing. She took us through every step, but it was still scary because the whole COVID thing going on with getting the COVID testing and then where you fly into, whether it's going to be safe and, you know, everything like that. But they helped us out every step of the way. The first year it was actually postponed, so we didn't make it the first year because of COVID. And then we waited to the last minute because we thought it was going to be canceled again. So we were kind of on edge of, are we really doing this or are we not doing it? So, and then you have to worry about your insurance because your medical insurance isn't accepted over there. So there's just little things that you definitely, normally I book Brielle's travel in the United States, no problem myself. I go on the website. But when you're traveling, doing something like this, it's always good to go through a travel agent because they can tell you all the little steps that you need to do. And AAA was very helpful with that.
Okay, so you said Dubula. Is that the name of the guide service?
Yes.
Okay, so they helped with the travel planning as well, not just
what, yes. Okay. He was accessible on WhatsApp 24/7. If you had any questions, any concerns, we were in constant communication on what's it like over there. They not only had COVID problems, but their hospitals were just a mess. So it wouldn't have been safe to go, even if COVID wasn't a deal. So, but she was 24/7. She would answer any questions you had.
Wow. That's service.
It was. And then also she hooked us up with somebody that met us at the airport that took us right off the plane, took us through customs, took us through the testing site of COVID, everything, got our luggage, put us in a taxi, took us to some place to stay, and then took us back to the airport to go to our final destination. So it was amazing. It was, yes, it was simple as could be. You didn't have to worry. You followed somebody, you trusted them. It was wonderful.
That's awesome. That's good to hear because there's just so many variables.
A lot of variables.
Yeah. And you know what? If you do it right, and it was $180 to have the service from the airport just for the security, it was definitely worth it.
Oh, absolutely. That is worth it, especially if you're taking the time and money to go out there. And this was in Tanzania, right?
No, we
went to Port Elizabeth. We flew into Port Elizabeth and ended up in Johannesburg.
Oh, okay. Johannesburg, South Africa. Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. And how long of a flight is that? Like, is that like an 18 hour or more?
The first one was 15 hours. And then the one from Port Elizabeth to Johannesburg was an hour and a half. And then we had a 2 hour drive to camp.
Oh, man. Just to add the cherry on top, you know, two
long
more hours.
Day, 3 days. Yeah.
It's a long process.
Is this something that you guys have wanted to do for a long time, or did you build to this? I know you've done previous hunts like Montana, right? Was this like a workup, or is this like someday I want to do an African hunt?
There's a gentleman local that does our taxidermist work, Artistic Visions, Aaron over there. He's a good friend of ours, and he was actually the one that hooked us up with the Bula Safaris. When he kept promoting it, he says, you got to go to Africa. I'm like, and as my wife mentioned, it was just a lot of uncertainty for me to head out of the country, let alone to go to Africa. A lot of unknowns, and you know, he kind of promoted it and kind of pushed it a lot more. And once we kind of mentioned the Brielle and we started showing pictures and what it was like, and you know, the opportunities that you had over there, it was kind of like it never left. We constantly talked about it and talked about it. So,
Awesome.
Brielle kind of has a bucket list. She said that she wanted to go to Africa first, then next was New Zealand.
Yeah, with COVID. They're closed down for COVID, so that one might be a little while, but there's a big, really, I think after Africa, the list like times 100 of all the trips and places and animals that I want to go visit and shoot. So it just, that opened a lot of doors and opportunities for, I mean, archery alone has a lot of opportunities. So that kind of opened a lot more doors.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you want to chase in New Zealand? Like red stag?
Stag. Yeah. That is, when I was little, that was always, because I love horned animals, especially big ones. So that was, when I was little, that was kind of like a huge deer. I mean, but that's what I thought it was like. So that was always a hunt that I've been dreaming of going on since I was a little kid. So.
Little kid, she's 15.
I know. Brielle, you've checked off more bucket list items than I would say most people in a lifetime. Yes. So keep it rolling. Keep the momentum going, you know?
Yeah.
We're getting tired.
So they picked you up at the airport. They drove you to camp. How long of a trip was it? Like a 2-week trip?
10 days.
10 days? Yeah. Okay.
10 days. 10 days of hunting and then
4 days
of traveling.
Okay.
2 weeks in total.
And the camp, was it like a pretty nice camp?
Extremely, extremely. It was kind of like, I mean, it was like a vacation, I would say.
We had our own house.
Yeah, we had our own place to stay at. We each had you guys had a room and I had my own room. Yeah.
Yeah, full shower.
Yeah.
We were nicer. Spoiled. Yeah.
We weren't intense.
Yeah.
We were not intense.
And the service, hey, you want me to speak? The service they provided was just flawless. From
getting our clothes cleaned every day, it couldn't have been more perfect. The food, the trackers, tracker animals, everything.
Good. I'm going to replay this for my wife because I've told her. I mean, our kids are still really young, but I'm like, one day we can go. It'll be like a family vacation, and then I'll just hunt because she's not really into hunting. But I'm like, there are going to be some nice accommodations. So I've seen pictures before for certain guides, and I know there's a wide range of guide services people can get. But some of the pictures I've seen where it's like you have nice dinner every night.
That was beautiful. Exactly. I mean, a lot of people I think that go to the place we hunted at. A lot of people just vacation there and then their husbands might go out and hunt.
Yeah. And you said they cooked up the animals that you got that day, right? Or over the week?
They kind of offset them a little bit. If I don't want to jump in here, but they kind of offset a little bit, Steve, where they would process them and then they would let them hang for, you're always a couple of days behind. They always gave them a couple of days to age.
Rest, yeah.
They had a big walk-in cooler where they actually hung everything. And then you were always, you know, like I said, a couple of days behind. In the beginning, it was things that they thought that they could serve right away. But then after that, they got fancy. And it was a chef. And his name was Chef. We just called him Chef every day. And
I love liver, so they always got the liver of the animals.
They did the livers. There was nothing wasted. It was absolutely
fine dining.
Right. Okay. It was fine dining where you were just sitting down family style, having a very good meal, enjoying yourself, relaxing, and you just enjoyed it. I mean, they had something for everybody there. And it was nice too, because the way they do it is they do parties. They don't do camps. So it was just us at the entire facility, you know, at the camp.
Oh, nice. So you're not having dinner with a whole bunch of strangers and
right.
It's not crowded all that.
Correct. Yeah, they do it by parties. So it was the three of us, and they promised us from day one that it would just be me and the girls. And it's different when you travel with you know, with the women, and you want a little more privacy, or you know, it's not like you're traveling with a bunch of guys and you don't care where you're sleeping or what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It adds a little something to it. And they know you, trust me, you'll be fine. And they were right.
Everne, she's the owner, and she took care of everything. She would contact me ahead of time and say, do you have any dietary restrictions, anything that you don't like? Do you do like? Do you want special soda? Do you want special creamer? Whatever you want, so that they will go and get it as much as they can in Africa and just make you feel comfortable. Anything we wanted, you know, as far as like yogurt or just crazy little things that make you comfortable. And she had it all there for us.
Wow. This is a little side tangent. But Anique, you said you like liver, right?
I love liver.
So I'm not a huge fan of the real livery taste, but I know liver's healthy for you. So I really try to figure out how to cook it. And found this trick, and maybe it's not really a secret or anything, but soaking it in lemon water overnight. And maybe you do like the liver taste, so this would not be this wouldn't work. But I this was a white-tailed deer. I soaked the liver overnight in, like, I don't know what the ratio, but some lemon juice and water, and it pulls out a lot of different like flavors and I guess other toxins that might be in the liver or whatever. And then so I did liver and onions. I cooked up for my 3-year-old boys, who basically eat chicken nuggets and that's meatballs. That's about it. And they ate it and they loved it. And I was like, wow. I'm like, changes the idea of when people say, oh, liver or acquired taste type foods. I'm like, I actually like liver if it's cooked like with that lemon way. But
I think too, a lot of people, it's the texture.
Oh yeah, texture.
The texture of liver. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, Steve, I walked back into the woods because I didn't grab the liver.
Oh man.
It happens more than not. And I enjoyed it just as much. I just, you know, it's not on my mind. It's to get it done, get out, and here I am walking back in. I'm gonna get in trouble if I don't get that liver.
Yeah.
They get extra too, because I don't eat it. I'm not a liver person. I have tried it in so many different ways, and every time they put it out, I try it, and I can't do it.
You didn't like the tongue, though, either, did you?
I didn't try it.
You should have tried it. I think that might have been a texture thing for you, too.
Yeah.
The tongue.
I ate a lot of things, but that kind of pushes the limit.
I actually have a few deer tongues in my freezer. They're probably freezer burned now, but I just can't. I'm like, oh, it's just one tongue. It's not enough for like a meal. So I'll wait. And then, you know, I shoot a doe or something. And I'm just like, I'll have to look something up. I'll do backstrap tonight instead of tongue. And I just, and I got some oddball parts in my freezer. But I really have to learn, get better about cooking and figuring that out.
They did them as appetizers.
Yeah, they did it as an appetizer, which was very, something, it was nice.
Good idea.
It was, you looked forward to going down and having dinner. You were like, all right, what's tonight?
Yeah.
You know, it was, nice. Or lunch. If you were able to come back during the day, you know, for lunch, it was spot on. I mean, they were just, whatever they did, it was amazing.
They gave you your beverage of your choice, and we kind of just talked about the day. And of course, there's tons of hunting stories, funny and, you know, exciting, all that stuff. And then they had the appetizers, and then we always had a specialty soup, and then we would sit, it would be buffet style. You would help yourself to always a very fresh salad, the main meal that was usually grilled over the fire, a potato of some sort, and it was delicious every single night.
The first day, did you just kind of get settled, you know, shoot your bow or anything just to make sure everything's on, or did they... You got set up and it's like, all right, tomorrow, here's dinner. Tomorrow we're heading out. We're jumping in a truck or something.
So when we flew into Johannesburg, we had a night there. So it was kind of, what would you say? An Airbnb?
It was like bed and breakfast.
Yeah. So that was extremely nice. They had an amazing meal there as well. So we kind of, that was kind of like our transition to the time zone and everything like that. So we had a night there, and then we had the flight from Johannesburg to Port Elizabeth, and then they picked us up, and it was still morning when we flew in. So then we had the rest of the day. We got completely unpacked because we're there for a while. We got to shoot our bows, make sure everything was fine. And then we had that whole day just to kind of relax, again, get used to the time zone. And then the next morning,
hang out with the guides.
Yeah, the next morning, we went out and hunt. But it's very chill. It wasn't like the whole trip, boom, boom, like we got to go out and hunt. It was kind of just, they let you do what you want to do.
Me
and Dad were kind of like, let's go out, like every morning, even when it was raining, we wanted to go out. But they kind of, they let you do what you choose to do. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So with the package, is it like a number of plains animals, or, cause I saw you guys had a lot of success. Was it like, if you went out, if you saw it, it was, did the party get so many tags per species or whatever? How did that work out?
So they do have packages. We kind of, before they were at the hunting show, the PA hunting show. So we saw them right, what was it, 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah.
Not even 2 weeks before we flew out. They were actually in the States because we were the first people in camp. So we kind of went over what animals we wanted to shoot. And I think at the time, what we had, 18?
I think so.
Around 18. And then I think when... when we went out there, things kind of changed, and it was every, I think I got through my list, and I was on the phone with Dad, hey, can I shoot this, can I shoot this? So when you go get out there, I think the plans change a lot. So
they were actually shocked at how many animals we were able to do in with a bow in that time frame. They were,
and the animals you did.
Yeah, and the animals that we did with a bow, they were kind of blown away that we were able to be as fortunate as we were. But we put the time in. We were out. We were out. We got up at, you know, 4 in the morning, 3:30, 4 in the morning.
Hunted all
every day.
We
hunted all day until dark, and then we came home, you know, whether we showered or not. And then we didn't eat dinner until 8-9 o'clock some nights. And we were back, you know, eat dinner back up at 4 and out hunting.
And like I said, that was our choice. We didn't have to do that. That's how me and Dad are. When we go out for a hunt, we want to hunt the whole entire time and take advantage of it. So I think going out there, I knew I was going to try to get as much sleep as I could going out there, because I was not going to sleep the whole time because I would want to be hunting.
It's bad when you have a 15-year-old getting you out of bed in the morning. She don't do that when it's time to go to school.
No, I think I was up at 3:30 every single morning, like ready to go out the door. And I'm the total opposite of that. Like with anything else, I'm always the last minute running out of the door, crap falling out of my hands. So that was kind of hunting, kind of, I would say I'm more organized when it comes to hunting. Passion. Yes. Yeah. And out the door and everything. So
that's awesome. Was it all spot and stalk? I know. What was it? The springbok you got at a watering hole, right?
Yeah, that was I think. The rest of them, I think, I mean, a couple animals.
Well, your blessed buck and your spring buck over water. There was only two that you shot over water.
So the spring buck was the only one over water that I got. A lot of the animals that I shot were hard to do spot and stalk. And what was my first animal? I'm trying to think. The kudu. Yeah, the kudu. Is extremely hard to do spot and stalk on. And we are actually, I forget what animal, but we were trying to stalk something else and we lost it. So my guy was kind of like, let's just creep up the mountain and see what we can find. And we turned around on a tree and we saw a kudu just munching away. So I think we got 50 yards from it, and I could tell he said, like, you should be excited right now. And I could tell by his personality, he was the one that gets super excited. And he was like, I've never even shot one of a spotted and stalked kudu before. So I was kind of like, okay, like this, this oh is, gosh. Yeah, real.
Did he say that in the moment?
Yeah.
Wow. What, so he's that? Just putting the pressure on.
Yeah, totally. Well, and you have to remember, her guide is a 20-year-old archer that's super excited about what he was doing. So the two of them were like two kids in a candy store.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had his father. There was a father and son. That was Carl Krull was the father and Victor was his son. And it was kind of funny because these two, it was like, it was whatever happens, happens policy. Like, he's gone. You know, and he's a total archer. Victor is his son. And, you know, he thought it was the coolest thing because a lot of people that go out there are rifle shooters. So it's a lot different. And he was very excited to have us come in as, you know, as archers.
Yeah. Me and Dad, we went with two different guys just because we had so many animals on the list. So we got to hunt a little bit together, which was nice. But as I was saying with the kudu, once he said, like, you should be excited for this, I was like, okay. So I was behind a tree and I kind of just kneeled. And that shot was perfect. It was at 50 yards. It was 50 yards away when I shot it, and it ran about 30 yards and dropped. So
that was
a good way to start off the hunt.
And that was the first animal you took?
That was the first animal. Yeah, that was the first day. Yeah. That set the expectations high.
Oh, wow. That is awesome.
Well, what was the second one?
Yeah, the second one was my sable. My sable, that was my number one bucket list going out there. That was my set one that I wanted to get. The sable, when I shot it, it was about 50 yards away. I think I took that shot at 52. And if I'm being honest, it just wasn't a good shot. Later on that day, we went back to camp and we did shoot my bow, and my bow was shooting extremely high left. So I think with just crawling and everything, my sight got bumped. But I shot it high back and left. And then that was kind of it for day two. So I really wasn't killed on day two. And then the third day, me and Victor went out and we were just looking for it everywhere we could. And we were kind of like, you know what? We were looking for it for such a long time. We were like, let's go see what else we can find. We'll come back and look for it later. So as we were walking back to the truck, Victor's putting the gun back in the case and he sees a sable. So then he starts sprinting after it. So I'm running behind him and I was extremely excited. So I'm like, shoot it, shoot it. And he's like, I don't know if it's the one. So he's trying to figure out if it's my sable or not. And he did. And in that moment, it's kind of so rush. You don't want a wounded animal running around. So he did have to shoot it. And then we got about 50 yards away from it, and it was still trying to stand up and run away. So then I had to shoot it again. And then I got to take the last shot on it. So it was kind of – that one is my redemption for next time. It was just – that was the one animal that I wanted to get with my bow. And I'm a strict bow hunter, so I'm not going to say it was a bow kill necessarily. So that was kind of – that was a fun one, though, because it was just so exciting, an adrenaline rush. But
especially when you shoot back and then you feel you get these mix of emotions. You're like, oh, are we going to get it? Are we not going to get it?
Yeah.
And then just there's a whole chase involved. And I'm glad that worked out.
Yes. That one was an emotional roller coaster. I was upset about that one. And I think everyone could tell I was upset about that one. So
yeah, well, at least you know it was the bow, because if it wasn't the bow and you said, oh, it's a little high left, I'm thinking, okay, so high left for Brielle is like 2 inches off the mark at 50. Like,
no, that one was extremely high left. So I was kind of like, too, I was kind of like, what the heck happened with that shot? I felt like it was a good shot. So we did find out it was the sight later on. And I think I might have took another shot at an animal after that. Yeah, and I missed it high left over it. So it was a complete miss. So then I said to Victor, I was like, we need to look at this bow. Like, there's no way I'm going to miss, I mean, a yard high left off an animal's back at twice, and they feel like good shots. So
yeah, I mean, it's consistent in the same spot. So it, yeah, it's
yes,
definitely the bow. Yeah. Now, at the time you guys went, was it like a wet season, a dry season, a transition? Was there like a reason they could say that you guys had a lot of like experiences on animals, or just kind of luck of the draw, migration, yeah, whatever?
We were the first group in there. So like I said, they come during the wintertime here, and they do all like the hunting shows and stuff like that, which is their off season. So they only got home a week before us. So they got home, it's their fall. So they were trying to figure out like how the animals and stuff were moving before we got out there. So they had a week at home, and then we got there. So we were the first group in. I think that's why there's animals everywhere. Like, so many animals. Like, it makes other places like Montana look bad, just because they're everywhere and there's so many different species. That was extremely cool.
So sable, the kudu, I know you shot all kinds of animals. And then I know you said your springbok was one of your favorite shots. Why can you kind of talk through like that whole scenario and
what happened?
And just for everyone listening, springbok, you know, kudu, big, sable, big. Springbok's small.
Small.
Extremely.
Yeah.
Steve, I just want to jump in. When I shot mine, I said to God, I said, how far out? He said 45 yards. So I drew back and I closed my one eye. So where'd it go? He said, it's still there. I said, I can't see him. That's the difference between 50 years of age and 15. I had to rethink it.
Oh, man.
So, just saying, yes, they do shrink when you close one eye. but go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, so that one was, we sat for that one, over, like I said, over a watering hole. We made ourselves a blind, and I'm not a big sitter. I'm very, like, I'm more of a stalker, like Dad would say. I can't sit still. And me and Victor were kind of goofing off in the blind, and we had the camera guy Dirk there with us too. So yeah, we got the whole entire hunt filmed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we should be getting that back shortly. But like I was saying, we were kind of just goofing off, and whenever we would hear something, obviously we'd stop, quiet down. And a springbok, obviously, it walked in, was drinking from the watering hole, and I drew on it and I shot it, and it kind of just, it dropped right there. It was at 50 yards. I didn't go, I would say the farthest shot I would say was 55 that I took. So it was 50 yards away and it just dropped right there. It was a perfect shot. Did not, I would say, took one step. The way I shot it, it went through the back leg. So it kind of broke it. So it kind of just fell. And that was the only animal that I had dropped right on spot. So besides the ones with the gun. So that was nice.
And a springbok, for people listening, I just Googled it. I know what they look like, but I can't even get an idea of the size. Is it about like the chest from belly to the top of the back, like 7-8 inches?
I would say
9.
It's the size of a medium sized dog, I would say.
Yeah.
Like a
skinny lab.
Yeah, like a skinny lab, exactly.
It's pick it up by four legs and just walk out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can hear it. You don't need any help.
Yeah.
But they're gorgeous.
And fast.
They're very, very, very beautiful, well respected, smart animal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's the markings on the animals in Africa are just, they're just unbelievable.
Yeah, there's not any just like, I mean, well, there are some, I guess, but there's not, it's not just like you're just a bunch of brown animals out there. I mean, there's all different stripes and, you know, it's dark on the front, light on the back, all different kinds of horn shapes.
You can't put into words how pretty and beautiful
they're just the animals gorgeous. Are. Yes, they're just, and you know, when you're out there and you hear the history or the, what I want to say, the history,
the background
of the animal, or the everyday life of the animal, when the guides are explaining them to you, you appreciate it. You really do. You like, we appreciate the white-tailed deer. It's one of the smartest animals on our side of the U.S. And, you know, you can't beat a white-tailed deer. Everybody wants to shoot a beautiful white-tailed deer. People in other countries want to shoot a beautiful white-tailed deer. But when you take the markings of these animals, it looks like they're drawn in with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's just beautiful.
Or the antlers on them. It's just the spot, like, they're all different. You don't have one that's the same.
I was amazed to see that a lot of the animals that Chad took, only because they were the older ones, like the wildebeest and stuff like that, their teeth were worn away. Right. And he would always say to me, these animals get old and they can't survive because they lose their teeth and they just end up dying. And it was proof. I actually got to see that when you would open their mouth, that their bottom teeth were like totally worn away, and how old they were, and you know, their time was coming to an end. And then their body got to be used to feed people, you know? It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of people...
they don't understand.
They don't understand, especially Africa. Mm-hmm. Like as an example, it was probably a handful of years ago. I forget the guy's name. I think he was a dentist from Minnesota. Yep. Shot this mm-hmm. famous lion. I don't know if it was Nathaniel or it had a name. And everyone gets so upset, and they're like, "Oh, I'm just saying Nathaniel. The name's probably wrong. You know, oh, they shot Nathaniel, and you know, this is a crime." Mm-hmm. But they don't realize, like, people actually have to deal with lions in Africa.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, we're so far removed that, yeah, everyone loves the idea of lions. No one wants to get mm-hmm. rid of lions, but they got to be in a controlled area. And that guy from Minnesota visiting Africa, I mean, he's
ruined
it's their whole economy. Like, a lot of these places in Africa, if they don't have that, it's just, they don't have anything, you know. It's great, like, for the whole community.
There's one thing they say, you know, and they're very, very true to it. And it was said to us more than once, if it wasn't for the states, their hunting wouldn't exist over there. Their economy would be affected so much, from their hotels to their airports to their a lot of their tourism in Africa, the hunting outweighs everything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that. And everything we shot, Steve, was, like I said, it was refrigerated. It went into the coolers. That meat was gone. It went into the towns. It went into the local economy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, none of it goes to waste.
Right. I mean, they were so concerned. I shot a golden wildebeest, and they were so concerned about the weight of it because it was the heaviest animal they ever shot on the property. And they went down and reweighed it because they were like, there's no way. They're so focused on what's going out to feed or to do what they do with the extra meat that it's all year long out there. And we're just one camp.
Mm-hmm.
We are one camp. And when you drive, when Brielle shot her Leshwe, we had to go to a different area, and I shot the caracal. We were down on the coastline. But when you leave that actual area and you travel through some of these towns, it's pretty amazing. You will appreciate where you come from, and you're only helping their, you know, you help out. You're helping out.
Yeah.
People don't understand how much money in the United States, how many billions of dollars that the hunting kicks into the economy.
Yeah. And in the conservation of those animals.
Absolutely, 100%. There is no hunting organization that would hurt the conservation. Flat out.
Yeah. Because, you know, these animals, they now have like a like a monetary value, and they want to
yep.
keep it going. So it's not a free for all where you just go and like,
no,
like the bison in the US, you know, before they started kind of really yep. recovering them. I mean,
exactly.
It's controlled and sustainable. So
we take, but we protect.
Yeah.
And that's what I like to say. We take, but we protect.
Yeah. That's one of our main things with Brielle, because she is a young female archer hunting, that to make people aware of what she's doing and not just have a negative outlook on it, to have a positive outlook in what she's really doing.
Especially, I mean, on social media, I mean, people take things the wrong way. So it's always good to explain everything as thorough as possible. So, I mean, I did get a little backlash on Africa, but I mean, yeah. It, as a hunter, you just have to deal with it, which is sad, but people, you try your best to educate people in the best way possible you can. And I think that's really all you can do. I mean, a lot of things, like you said, with the lions will come in and they'll, you don't think about it this way, but they'll take kids and they'll hurt kids and they'll end up like killing kids and taking them off their playgrounds and stuff like that. And you don't think about that over here, but over there, it's just the way of life. And would you rather take an animal out that's hurting innocent children? So I think a lot of times just explaining everything that goes into it is the best way you can do. I mean, there's always going to be people that don't like it, but.
Yeah, everyone, a lot of people in the US just picture Africa like the Lion King. Like you just shot uh-huh. Mufasa.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, yeah. there's people living in fear
You're or right.
getting attacked at water holes, you know, mm-hmm. by hippos and gators and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I would always, whenever I tell people about, like, the first thing they'd ask is, where are you going to hunt? I'd be like, Africa. And then I'd try to explain it thoroughly. Because the first idea, I feel like I have to, because the first idea that comes into their head is obviously, like, Lion King, like you said. So I think as a hunter, the best thing is you can do is just explain everything, and that's about it.
Yeah. And now, Chad, you said you got a caracal, is that what you said? That's like it's a cat, right?
Yes. It's in the cat family. Yeah, that was pretty cool. it was different for sure.
I gotta say, that was number two on my list. Number two, that was with the sable. My two ones that I wanted to get, and he got one and I didn't. So
well, that's an excuse to go back, you know?
Yeah, we
exactly.
We went to, because that was on a different property. So you shot the caracal that day, and then I went to. I had the option if I wanted to shoot the caracal or the leshway, because the leshway was on a different property. So
she shot a very, very beautiful leshway. So I must say, but and Steve, that's a total reflection of what we were just talking about, where you know we have a guy who when we left where we were hunting, we went down to the coast. We met another guy. His name was Tim Foley, if I'm not mistaken. Very nice man. And he runs dogs on the coastline. Beautiful out there, the scenery. But he runs dogs on the coastline. He gets paid from the farmers to get rid of the caracals. So then in turn, he gets to sell the licenses to us, or to have us go out and hunt. So he's protecting the cattle that's running on the coastline, and we're going out to shoot the caracals. They put dogs on them.
It's kind of like a mountain lion in Montana.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very small.
Or a fox or a coyote here. It's kind of like right. the same thing.
They're like a nuisance.
Now, do you tree them? Like when you're saying chase with dogs. Okay, so they do climb trees. All right.
Yep, they treat them. And it's amazing. They don't, the locals don't like when they hit the ground, because when they hit the ground, they say they're too fast. Yeah. When it got shot, and even though he fell out of the tree, they were very quick to respond, even though he was expired.
Now it was now what do you mean? Did it was it like hissing and swiping at you guys, or what?
No, he was very upset when he was in the tree, and they the gentleman, Mr. Foley, I called him. Mr. Foley said, "Can you shoot him?" And I said, "I can't see him. I can't see. I could see the brown." And he said, "Do you see that little Y in the tree?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "If you put, you need to put the arrow right through that Y." And he said, "Can you do that?" And you know, it was interesting, which I'll get back to. But so I shot, and it went right through the Y, and it hit him. And when he came down, I mean, he was done at the time. But when he hit the ground, everybody was on guard because they just said they're so fast.
And they're expecting it could just jump up and go in any direction, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But it was interesting that the day before, because they knew I was going to shoot it out of a tree, and they wanted to make sure at 20 yards.
Your arrow?
Yeah, my arrow didn't gravity. Have much, which at 70 pounds, 73 pound pull draw weight, it wasn't much difference. But they were worried about shooting up, because when you shoot up, your arrow isn't drawn by gravity. So you're not losing inches as it goes out for distance. Mm-hmm. You're losing speed.
Oh, so you had to measure what your drop off would be.
Exactly, but when you're aiming in the air, you're losing your speed as opposed to your drop. So they wanted to make sure if I had like a 30-yard shot, I could use my 20-yard pin if it was higher elevation. I don't even know if I'm explaining that.
No, right. I know what you mean. No,
you're not shooting straight. You're not getting gravity pull. You're shooting straight up. You're just getting the pull straight down, where you're just losing velocity at that point. Mm-hmm. It didn't come into play because it was so close. But if it wasn't close, it would have been a little bit of a difference.
You might have to be wrestling that thing on the ground, right?
Yeah, right. Now everybody kind of scattered. We had the guy that we had, our skinning guy, which was basically, he was with us 24/7, Alex. He's a great guy. That thing hit the ground, and he didn't budge on any animal we shot, even the Cape Buffalo. But boy, when that cat hit the ground, he jumped, and he just wanted to make sure it was dead.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to give me I'm going to like start researching this cat now. There's got to be videos out there, right, of this thing going crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he said too fast. And I said, okay.
So I do want to talk about the Cape Buffalo. But so Anik, at this time, are you along following Brielle or Chad, or are you back at the camp, or what's your days looking like?
Well, we did separate. Chad and I went with his guide, and Brielle went with her guide and the photographer. So for most of the hunts, I was with them, and I would just follow behind. And if it got...
You were with Dad.
I was with Chad. And if I was... If it got too intense, like too close, then I would stand back. A lot of times I would just pull out my cell phone and just videotape or do something like that. Okay. But yeah, so from them hunting in Montana and other places, I kind of learned when to stay back, because I knew that me walking along would just be too much of a distraction.
When you have four people walking through the woods, it's a lot. So
yeah.
A lot of times, even with me and Victor, the camera guy would have to stay at least 30 yards back, just because you want to limit the amount of noise, the amount of movement. So,
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So I try, and go as far as I possibly can to watch, but then I know when to stand back, and then I get to see what happens afterwards. So it's, and then there was a couple mornings where I did sleep in.
Understandable.
11 o'clock at night, going to bed and waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning wasn't totally working for me.
Especially for 10 days straight. That's a long.
It was
long.
Yes, there were a couple days like I would have to alternate, like 1 or 2 days where I'd have to stay back because I was just exhausted. And they do have the adrenaline of hunting.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I was just kind of like, I need a moment.
We got rained out one morning too. So me and Dad got to sleep in a little bit. Dad actually got sick. That'll play into your Buffalo story, but he did get sick. So one morning we got rained out and you got to sleep in a little bit, and me and Victor were kind of just trying to sit there and try to relax. And I texted him, and we both texted each other, and we were like, we need to go out hunting. Like, even though it's raining, we were just going insane just sitting there. So you slept in that morning, and me and Victor went out.
Slept on the couch fully dressed.
Yeah. You need to explain your Cape Buffalo story now.
Oh, boy. Is this your intermission?
Yeah, my intermission. Over? Go ahead.
So where do we start, Steve?
So Cape Buffalo, I mean, that was later in the week, right? Was that a plan going into Africa, or once you're in Africa, you're like, you know what, if this does come up, let's go for the Cape Buffalo.
No, it was planned. That was my go-to. That was one of the things that I wanted to do prior to going out. Like Brielle said, hers was the sable, mine was the Cape Buffalo. And the thought process, you know, it was game on, you know, you wanted to make it happen, this and that. And we went to the show. We actually went to the show, mm-hmm. and we talked to the younger guy, Brielle's guy, Victor. And Victor was going through the arrow build. He was looking at a 915 grain arrow made by Grizzly Stick. And the broadhead was a 300 total weight of the arrow with the broadhead was 915 grains. Wow. And the broadhead was 315.
I'd like to add in there quick for people that don't know about arrow setup and stuff. That is an extremely, extremely heavy arrow. Like, I still can't get over it whenever I walk in the garage and hold the arrow. It was mind blowing just how heavy the arrow had to be.
It was almost holding three arrows in one hand. You know, we shoot 100, 125 grain tip. This was 315 grain.
Was it like a single bevel broadhead, or was it?
It was. Okay. It was forged steel. And what happened was, when he was discussing everything with us, he told me about the weight that they were looking for. And we actually, Braille gets coached by a guy in New York, a gentleman, Mike Price.
Heritage Archery.
And Heritage Archery. She gets coached by him occasionally. And we actually drove out there, spur of the moment, because we were going out, you know, we told him we were going out to Africa. He knew about it. And I said, Mike, we got to build an arrow. We got to get somewhere up into the 900 grain arrow. And he said, all right, well, let's get out of here. So we were able to get up to 700 and change. And make a long story short, when I came home, I called actually Grizzly Stick. And I said, listen, I left them a message. And they actually called me back right away. They opened up. And Grizzly, the guy, you know, he was asking me, he said, listen, what are you going to do? I told him my bow. I told him my draw weight. Told him everything that was going on. And he said, okay. He said, not a problem at all. He said, we'll build you an arrow. I told him my arrow length, my draw length. He goes, I'm comfortable with you doing 40 yards or less. Don't push it past 40. So I said, okay. So I said, the problem is, I said, I leave in 2 weeks. Are you going to be able to build these arrows for me? He said, yeah, we'll get them to you. Needless to say, they were able to get them to me. Awesome. Great people. Got the arrows, brought it home. I was at 40 yards. I had a 4x6 target.
Big target.
Aimed at the top of the target.
Tippy top of the target. And he was sighted in for 40 just with his other
arrows. With my regular arrows. Shot under it. Had a 4-foot drop. And put it through the tire and the axle of the
wagon
that it was, the target was on.
Oh my God.
Penetration was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But the drop, wow. Exceptional.
Then so, he has 5 arrows.
So now I'm a little upset because they're not cheap arrows. But anyway, so then I got 5. I ordered 6. So, but anyway, we figured that out and we got adjusted and. We started the hunt.
Wow, 4 feet through a tire and the axle. You're talking
into
about
the axle.
The cart is like a little trailer steel. Thing, right? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it penetrated the steel tube and went into the axle. So
a good effective test. That's good.
That's when he looks at me and goes, "We do not tell anyone about this." And if I did that, I'd be getting in trouble. But he just looks at me and goes, "We are not going to talk about this at all."
Not expecting.
Yeah.
So are we getting into the hunt now?
Yeah. So you said, you mentioned that you were probably maybe sick that morning or day before.
Yeah, I guess the dirty truth comes out. I shot a black wildebeest, and it was, he kind of played me for a little while, and him and I went, what's that?
All of us.
I was all there of us. But it was the hottest day.
It was truly an experience of the African sun when there is nothing around you. You are in the Plains Games. There was where it took place. It was just, and this black wildebeest was beautiful, gorgeous. He played me, wouldn't leave a field. He was in a grass field.
We walked for miles.
But we drove by him. He didn't move. We came back, and I said, "I'm going to jump out of this truck." I said to the guy, I said, "Just drive by that shrub. I'm going to jump out, and I want to see if I can get behind the shrub and, you know, take a shot." So we did. And he got off. He sent me, and he was gone. So another maybe an hour went by, and we were coming back through, and he was standing in the middle of this green field again. And we came through on the vehicle, and I got out. I said, "You know what? Stop this." He stopped. I said, "I'm going to get out." And I got out, and he was staring at me, and he's huffing and puffing. So I took the shot. I peeked, shot left, and it was a long track.
Oh. And so at this time, I'm gonna say where I'm coming hot. From. So me and Victor just pulled in for lunch, and I'm going back up to where we are staying to get changed. And it then Victor pretty. Starts honking on the horn and screaming at me. So then I run back to the truck. I get back in the truck, and he's like, "Your dad wounded a wildebeest." So then we start speeding off because we need to obviously track it and help them. So I shouldn't have not gotten in the vehicle. Let me just say that. I didn't have to go. I shouldn't have went, but I chose to.
It was a long. We had dogs. We were able to recover it.
How long were you looking for it, would you say?
3 hours.
Yeah, in like 100 degree
midday
heat. And that sun there.
Midday heat. Yes, exactly.
I went to sit on a rock. And I couldn't sit on the rock because the rock was too hot.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
They came back, and I came out not knowing what was going on. And I looked at Chad, and I said,
"It was bad.
Oh, my goodness. What is wrong with you? Are you okay?" Like, I seriously, like, it was bad. Like, he – so we thinking that you had
– And when you're there, you have pants – I mean – you're hunting, obviously, so you have black boots on. You're completely covered, so that just makes it 100 times worse.
Yeah, we weren't into our season. It was hot. It was just flat out hot. And we had a long track. We were able to recover, and we wound up getting them. And that was the beast of the hunt. But so the next day we were going out to
we got rained in that day.
Yeah, but that was the day.
We were supposed to
hunt the Cape Buffalo the next morning, which kind of was nice because it was pouring. And the gentleman that owned the property where we were driving to, he called our guide and said, "Listen," he says, "we got 50 to 60 mile an hour wind gusts. It's pouring down rain." He said, "You guys can do what you want, but I don't think today's a good day to do it." So we were kind of fortunate not to have to go out that day due to the weather. But I will say, I went out that day and I shot a slamming, the biggest golden wildebeest on that reserve the whole time.
Yeah, but ever. He was very, very scared.
But I was sick. But I still slammed it. Beautiful, beautiful golden wildebeest. I slammed them. So anyway, so we went out the next day. We met up with the guy. I had my guide, Carl Kroll, and there was a gentleman there. What was his
John.
Name? John.
Yeah. He used to work for Dabula.
He actually worked for Dabula.
He's young.
Very good story, history there. But anyway, John was kind of working that property that we were out where we were at. And we sent off, we headed out on the bow hunt, and John was kind of really excited because he had never had anybody on the hunt with a bow on that property. So we headed out. The owner was with us.
I did my own thing.
Brielle and her guide went out and did their own thing. And we were on them for about a mile, tracking to them back and forth. We had them, and we got busted. The wind busted us. So we regrouped, and we started on a 6-mile journey. They figured it out. It was six miles. Over 2 hours, yeah. We had them. We had them in our sights. It was, if I'm not mistaken, it was 6 or 4 buffalo, Cape buffalo. And, you know, it's not to jump back, but it's different when they get out and they're loading their rifles, you know.
Yeah, the professional hunters,
right,
who are do this every day, when they look nervous – it might be that's a red flag or a cause of concern.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't want to leave that out because it was true. When we got there and Carl gets out and Carl grabs his rifle, that's his go-to. And John gets out and he loads his, and you're walking game with on. These guys. It's game on. I mean, you're
life or death.
Yeah. You're one of the most dangerous game animals in Africa. With an arrow. So when we headed out, we got busted about a mile into it. And then we started again and we got on them, and a couple hours went by, and the guy, John, the younger guy in the group, he said, listen, he goes, there's a water hole up here. And he said, There's got to be a water hole up here. We were on them. We were walking beside them. We were walking behind them. We were walking to the left of them. We always had them in somewhat of a sight, and the wind played very, very well for us. And when John pulled up his Google Maps, he pulled up the Google Map and he said, the water hole's right up here. He said, we need to get to that water hole before they do. We'll get set up. So we got up to the water hole, and you know, you're kind of thinking to yourself, as any hunter would, don't screw this up. We just spent 2 to 3 hours tracking them. We walked 6 miles. You don't want to screw this up. And we get up to the water hole. We get set up. And we're sitting there for about 20, 25 minutes, and nothing's going on. Like, no peep, nothing. So he's like, all right, something, they've ventured out somewhere. So we got up. And we walked back like 20 yards and we heard a limb snap. We couldn't see 4 buffalo 20 yards in front of us.
That's pretty scary.
They were literally 20 yards in the woods or in the thicket. I say woods, tell them from Pennsylvania. They were in the thicket and they were sitting there hanging. You couldn't even tell. It just, a limb broke and he's like, they're there. So he's like, let's go. And we set up, and I was right on the outbreak of the brush line on my knees. And I had John, the one guy behind me with his gun. And I had the other guy, Carl, he was right behind him with the gun and the photographer. And three of them came out. The video is unbelievable. And I was about 20 yards from the three of them. I'm sitting there on my knees. And I got the bow resting on my knee, and I'm hooked on. And the guide's like, he's got his binos up. And he's like, they're not the ones. They're not the one you want. And you saw him come out, and he's like, that's the one.
Are you talking about like the fourth one? So three came out, then
yeah,
the fourth one?
Okay. So the fourth one, he was the money one. And when he came out, he turned and he looked and he started staring at us.
Was he broadside or is he just facing?
No, head on.
Okay.
Head on. Chewing on his grass. And when he was chewing, I could see John like five, it felt like forever. I could see his binos dropping, my legs cramping. And I'm going, I said to him, I said, my leg. And I'm sitting there saying, don't screw this up. Don't screw it up. And he stuck his head down to grab some grass and turn broadside at the same time. And I drew, shot. He ran. He went behind a thicket and he looked. And they were hooting and hollering to shoot him. And he took off. And I was like, he's fine. You can see the
It was a perfect shot. I need to say, I saw it on camera. It could not have been more perfect. And the arrow did exactly what it was supposed to do. It was just, it could not have been more perfect than it was. I do have to say that.
Yeah, it was, I got lucky. I'll just say I got lucky. Because you can hear.
I don't think perfect shots are luck.
You can hear me on the video going. You can hear my heart rate my breathing start to increase.
You can hear all of them going. They're all so nervous.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So, did the arrow pass through, or was it sticking out halfway, or what did the arrow?
The arrow went through. The arrow went through. As soon as it went through, he took a step, snapped right below the fletchings, and the broadhead was completely, when we scun him, he was completely through the meat, and it was touching the skin, ready to come out the other side.
Wow.
But forged steel broadhead, whatever I hit going into that animal, broke the tip of the broadhead off. Forged steel. That's what it's made out of.
Wow.
It took a chunk out of the broadhead. So I must have went in, where the arrow was coming out was about 3 feet difference from where I shot it. So I think it went in, hit a rib, and deflected backwards. Because the entry wound and the exit, which would have been the exit wound, is about 3 foot difference, believe it or not. So that arrow did some traveling inside that cavity before it came out. And grizzly stick, tell you guys, if anybody's going over to hunt big game, they are just calm. They were spot on. Spot on. Draw weight, draw length, arrow length. Yep, we'll build you an arrow.
So you're saying from where it went in, and then it kind of went kind of diagonally back, and there's like a 3 foot gap if you're looking broadside. But I mean, this thing's also what? Probably 3 feet wide or something. I mean, it's probably a thick,
every bit,
really thick body.
Oh yeah,
huge.
Yeah, they're big.
Like you don't realize how big they are from a picture. That thing is humongous.
Yeah, when he came out and he's sitting there staring at you, you're feeling inferior. Like you're, oh my, it's not like a cow.
Oh no.
Or even like a bull.
Four cows put together. They're a mean cow.
Yeah, and he's just sitting there staring at you, and he's just like, all right, what are you?
Yeah. And it's not even like it was broadside right away, so you're like, okay, I'm just going to go through my steps.
Oh, no, yeah.
I'm going to draw. Okay, I'm looking here. You're watching it head on. You're like, this thing might even
charge. We had a little stare down. Just waiting. We had a little stare down.
Well, the guy told you, too, not to look at him in the eye, didn't they?
Yeah, and the guy was like, just
the entire time, which is very stressful.
So he gave me a little showdown. It's on video. The photographer,
Dirk,
who was phenomenal. We had a great time with him. He was so excited to have get what he got on film. And the guy, John, he has the other half of my arrow, which I would have never given to anybody. But that gentleman was so excited that took place with a bow, that he's like, I gotta have this. Can I have your arrow? So he took the fletching part that broke off. He's like, I want to have this. He never took a Cape Buffalo like that with a bow.
That is awesome. Oh my gosh,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, the animals that you guys took with bows was impressive.
Yeah, we took some pretty cool stuff. Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
I don't think next time when we do go out there, because there hopefully will be a next time, definitely. But I don't, next time we'll have more of like specific animals that we want to shoot. But I don't think the chances of us getting as good as a hunt as we did this pastime, it'll be amazing if anyone or if we ever do again.
A leopard. That's on Riel's list, Steve.
A leopard. Yeah.
There's a couple.
Well, I'm assuming the big five has got to be on everyone's list, right?
I mean, that's... I definitely want to get a big five, hopefully, well, with my bow. There's lots of time in my life to do it.
I don't, and that's, we try to explain that to her, and I don't think, I think there was one other woman.
Ever. Ever. The only one ever to do it with a bow.
With, to do it with a bow. The big five. And I don't know. Don't post, don't like put it out there. I'm just saying, I think.
No,
I
put it out there.
No, I'm saying right now, you can put this on film. I will be doing it sometime, hopefully. Yes. That is definitely one of the top things on archery goal lists.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many, but that's definitely, for hunting, that is definitely one of the top three, I would say.
Well, if someone can do it, I know it's you, Brielle.
Thank you.
That, I mean, it sounds like an amazing trip.
We had a very good trip. Mm-hmm. Flawless. We were very fortunate. We didn't have any hiccups.
But with any trip, you have to expect, like,
you gotta
it's
go in
not going to, you have to have a positive attitude. The day that we left, we spent, what, how many hours in the airport?
No, more than that. We spent a whole day from morning to night there. Just
we spent, I think, 14 hours in the airport.
That was the most depressing, just sitting there. Because I was like, seriously, like, I just loved that trip. And I did not want to go home. And you just had to sit in an airport for like 13 hours straight. Just sitting there, and doing nothing.
The airline that was leaving from Johannesburg to Port Elizabeth had shut down because they weren't able to take care of for maintenance. So they stopped all flights. So we had to rearrange our flight, which is something else that Ian Byrne was on top of and took care of for us so we could get on a different airline. But we had to stay in the airport. It was at least 13, 14 hours.
They were very nice. We told the gentleman, we said, we're going to be sitting at your table because there's no chairs or anything in the public area, so you're either sitting in a restaurant
or wherever. We couldn't check into our flight yet, so we were just sitting there.
Yeah, so we told him, we said, listen, we're going to be here for about 12 hours. I'll take care of you. We're done. We're going to be sitting at your table. Steve, I think
that was very extremely bad.
But for anybody that's doing a trip like this, have to go with the flow. And expect
delays, expect problems, but trust in your referrals, trust in what people tell you. I've learned that through a lot of the hunting, between, you know, Riel and I going for gators, turkey, to wild boar, to turkey, to, you know, deer hunting, to going out to Africa, going to Montana. Listen to what people tell you and build a good group of people that you trust, whether it's people at the archery range or people that you know through taxidermy or through the hunting shows. But listen to what people tell you, especially if you have kids that are going hunting with you. Listen to, it's a different atmosphere when you're bringing kids, when you're bringing your wife, when you're bringing so-and-so. Like I said, it's not 12 guys just jumping in a cabin or a tent and hunt. Take it with a grain of salt. Take your kids hunting and enjoy it.
I think one of the best parts about hunting and archery and everything is you get a family out of it. I mean, from everybody at the clubs to everyone at my competitions to everyone with all the hunting places that we go to. We have a trusted, huge family wherever we go to. And I think that's definitely, I think, one of the best things that I've been taught being brought up into archery and hunting, and especially the people skills. Especially if you're trying to get your kids into hunting, just the people skills and everything that they learn out of it. I mean, we were scared of, because I'm not in school anymore, taking me out of, well, I'm on online. I do online school now. But I'm not in a school building. I'm not in a school with other kids. So I think archery, if you have a kid that's not social and they're more shy, archery is definitely a place where they'll be welcomed and learn a lot.
But Steve, when we originally spoke to several teachers and guidance counselors about her doing online school, they were worried about her social interaction.
Me and not being social.
And we said, this kid has more people that she socializes with throughout the entire world.
Yeah.
Her broadband of
friends. Everything, yeah.
I mean,
having to introduce yourself to people and
of all everything. Ages.
Yeah. All ages. When she was in Turkey, she shot in Turkey in a world competition 3 weeks ago.
A month ago.
She shot in Turkey in a world competition, and you know, there was people out there that had children she shot against. They had children older than her. You know, they were 38, 37 years of age, and you know, it's a good background of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't be afraid, anybody, if you have anybody out there that wants to get involved in this sport. Or introduced.
No one, 90% of the people, 99% of the people with hunting and archery are the nicest people on the planet. So don't be afraid to ask questions, talk to people, get to know people. I think getting to know people is the best thing you can do, because it widens like your mind. I mean, not your mind, but what social. Am I trying to say? Yeah, your social, just everything from hunting to anything.
Yeah. So what is next for all of you? You guys doing another trip or?
Do we have five tomorrow,
four next week?
We have these talks every single night about what's next. And I think it's just saying, having the actual conversation of we're doing this, like we're going for it. I think
we have.
Gardner Ranch with archery coming up first.
I'm going to finish up my, obviously I have this every year, but I'll finish up my USATs for the season, to get on Team USA again. So next week I leave for Florida again, and then the following week after that I leave for California. So
Alabama.
Yeah. Ohio. Just those are typical for us. Those are like every weekend trips.
Oh my gosh. How about hunting trips? Any hunting trips for the fall?
Dad was kind of looking for a little break. We rarely get breaks from any trips, so he was looking forward to a little break this year, because we didn't think we were going to draw tags for mule deer or whitetail in Montana, because we've been so fortunate in the past couple of years. And out of the blue, my dad, my uncle, and I all drew bull elk tags.
Oh, nice.
And deer tags. So that is the next big hunting adventure besides PA season, but that's the next one on the list. We're going to, I think, be in the country for a little bit.
Now she's into the calling.
Yeah.
So now all the
we're trying to learn how to elk call. Yeah. So. I think our dog's going to kill me, because he just hates the noise of me trying to practice elk calls. I think everyone does, but.
And you got to practice them all. You got to try different diaphragms. You got to do some mule calls. You got to rip some large bugles. So
yeah, I'm not an expert yet. I will say that. It kind of just sounds.
It's kind of like the saxophone all over.
But this one I will master. I didn't master the saxophone. I will master this.
And thank you. Thank you very, very much, Steve, for having us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. You guys are a great example of what I think a lot of families want to do, even the closeness, even if archery's not the path. I think you guys are just a great example. And, you know, I hope my daughter wants to hunt with me someday. So that's encouraging that you guys are doing so well. Brielle, I know you mentioned earlier you have social media. Is there any social media you want to plug?
Yeah. USA Archery is just typical USA Archery. You can type it in any social media platform and come up. My social media for everything is just Brielle Ochnick. And then let me see what it's. Are you going to put it? Do you want me to spell it?
Yes, please.
It's BRIELLE_OCHNICH. And then let me see what Victor's Instagram is. Pull it up now. Victor's Instagram's just VIC_KRULL. Victor Krull.
Yeah, very cool. So,
yeah, both of us are on just our names. If you type it in, I'll come up on any social media.
Cool. And they'll be able to follow you, your archery competition, and they'll be able to see all these African animals.
Yeah. All my animals are on there. Dad's Cape's on my Instagram. So
I'm gonna start plugging some videos once it comes out.
Yes. Once we get our video back from Africa, we got a little teaser of it when we were still there. So once we get the full video, I'll be posting on YouTube. So my YouTube's just the same thing, Brielle Ocknick, and then we'll be posting videos from the hunt there. You'll pretty much be able to see all of my hunts and pretty much, I'd say, 50% of Dad's. So,
cool.
Yep. All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. And I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Good. Have a good night. Thanks, Steve. See you.
Hey, thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to like and subscribe. And if you'd like to support this podcast to sustain future episodes, feel free to click on the listener support link in the show notes. There'll be more content coming, and if there are any questions or comments, you can reach me on Instagram at Outdoors with Steve or at Pivotal Outdoors.